Coming up on KUCB News, city councilors cancel a session on, quote, litigation, and shipping regulators move toward banning a certain type of fuel oil. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. The Unalaska City Council could be headed to court, although the legal matter at stake is unclear. Last night, city councilors had scheduled an executive session to, quote, discuss litigation, but they canceled it after several councilors joined the meeting by telephone, resulting in an insufficient in-person quorum for discussion behind closed doors. City Manager Thomas E. Thomas declined to comment on the nature of the litigation. It is unclear if there's any connection to a state investigation concerning at least one of Unalaska's elected officials. The Alaska Office of Special Prosecutions has been reviewing the findings of that inquiry by the Alaska State Troopers since late April. At that time, Chief Assistant Attorney General Paul Myovis told KUCB that his office would decide whether to pursue criminal charges after a month or two. He has not responded to requests for comment since. Myovis troopers and local officials have all declined to comment on the scope of the investigation, although a former counselor has suggested that it stems from a personnel controversy that erupted last summer between the council and former city manager Dave Martinson. The council's next meeting is set for June 26th. City Manager Thomas declined to say whether the litigation discussion will be back on the agenda. And tune in tomorrow for our continued coverage of last night's City Council meeting. We will bring you more on the financial situation at Unalaska's clinic, as well as potential changes to the city's property tax exemption for senior citizens. Join us tomorrow for the new newscast here on 89.7 FM. This year, the United Nations organization that regulates international shipping decided to move toward banning the use of heavy fuel oil in the Arctic. The thick oil could present unique cleanup challenges in the event of a spill, and environmental groups are cheering the decision. But as Ravenna Koenig reports for Alaska's Energy Desk, the ban is still a ways away.
Heavy fuel oil, also called HFO, is relatively cheap, which is why it's commonly used by big commercial ships around the world, and to a lesser but still significant degree, in the Arctic. Kevin Herron is the Arctic Program Director for Pacific Environment, an international conservation organization. He represented the group in early April in London at the meeting of one of the committees of the International Maritime Organization.
It is a big deal that the IMO has been looking at a ban. It's a very cautious body, and it normally does not act without strong support from countries.
The United States was one of several countries that submitted a paper recommending the move. Heavy fuel oil is, well, heavy, and it could present some particular difficulties in a spill. It sinks in many cases when it's cold, and it doesn't disperse easily. Austin Amasuk from Nome also attended the meeting. He's a marine advocate for the Bering Strait Regional Nonprofit Corporation, Kowarik, and he supports HFO being taken out of use in the Arctic.
We want our waters as pristine as possible, and a heavy fuel oil spill or burning of heavy fuel oil represents or is some of the dirtiest ship power generation that exists.
One of Amasuk's big concerns is how such a spill could affect marine subsistence resources in the Bering Strait region. Even though the regulatory group made the decision to start developing a ban, there's still a lot that will have to happen before it's put in place. Jeff Lance with the U.S. Coast Guard was the lead representative for the U.S. at the meeting. He says the group will have to assess the impacts of a ban.
It would be looking at the environmental benefit, but it would also be looking at the cost to shipping. It could be looking at the cost to communities in the Arctic. Would it raise the cost for delivery of goods and services to these communities?
Once the assessment is done, the terms of the ban will have to be negotiated, including things like when it would go into effect. A final decision may still be several years out. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks.
Southwest Alaskans hear a lot about the controversial Pebble Mine proposed for Bristol Bay, but there's another contentious mining project in development, and it's even closer to becoming a reality. That's the Donlin Gold Mine proposed for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, and as Christy Schallenberger reports for Alaska's Energy Desk, it's advancing through the permitting process now.
Residents of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta have heard about the Donlin Gold Mine. They've seen the logo on hats and bags and on flyers throughout Bethel and villages. But it's not easy to understand the actual process to get this complex project approved. The environmental impact statement in particular, with its thousands of pages, is a difficult read.
That document is, you know, massive. I've got a degree of biologist, and I struggled a lot trying to sort through that document.
David Cannon has worked for the Kuskokwim River Watershed Council as a fish biologist, and he's worked for the Forest Service and with the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge. He's also a local activist who is trying to educate the region on what he sees as the dangers of the gold mine. Donlin has held multiple hearings in villages and Bethel about the mine since it was first conceived in the late 1990s, and in an area where there hasn't been any sort of massive extraction industry, the terms might as well be a whole new language.
I knew that most people here had never even heard of NEPA, that National Environmental Policy Act, or Environmental Impact Statement.
The Environmental Impact Statement is just the first step in the process. The EIS is required for projects that involve federal agencies like the Army Corps of Engineers and could significantly impact the environment. A broad range of state and federal agencies and villages directly affected by the mine participated in the EIS process. That's important because Donlin has to receive at least 100 permits from federal and state entities. For instance, because the mine would be housed in wetlands, the Army Corps has to issue a permit. And states are required by federal law, like the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act, to regulate environmental impacts. Donlin spokesman Kurt Parkin says while the company anticipates getting most of the major permits out of the way this year, the rest will take more time.
Probably within the next 2 to 3 years, we'll get probably the majority of all the permits that we'll need.
The EIS is probably the most bureaucratic endeavor in the process. It takes years and millions of dollars to complete. It's been 5 years since Donlin submitted an application in 2012, but now that the final EIS is out, the company has a much clearer idea of its progress. It already has 2 permits from the state, with the most recent one allowing wastewater discharge into Crooked Creek. Compared to other proposed mines in Alaska, like the Pebble Mine in Bristol Bay, for instance, Donlin is farthest along in the process.
Donlin would probably be the largest that's nearing the end of its permitting process.
Faith Martineau is executive director for the permitting office at the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. In that role, she coordinates with federal and state agencies and industries about the permitting process to make sure information can be found in one place. Donlin is one of her projects. Now that the company is in the permitting process, she says it's highly unlikely that the state will prevent the company from building the mine.
So I would say that it's a fairly uncommon occurrence because one of the major facets of the regulatory process is kind of this back and forth.
Throughout the EIS process, Donlin and the agencies involved calculate the environmental risks from the mine. For instance, as Army Corps drafted the report, stakeholders gave feedback and studies provided more information on the proposed mine. As a result, the company has modified the proposal in response to concerns from the state throughout the process. Donlin's Parkin says the company is aiming for approval.
And so everything we've been doing up to this point is working towards yes.
Donlin is now waiting on the combined record of decision from the Army Corps and the Bureau of Land Management, which would determine how plans for the current mine proceed. But even once the companies have all the permits in hand, they would be years away from starting construction because they would need to reevaluate whether or not the mine makes financial sense. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Christy Schallenberger in Bethel.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.